Hello, you wonderful woman. Welcome to the Love is Coming podcast. I'm your host, Persia Lawson, one of the UK's most successful love coaches, according to the Times magazine, and author of the book, Love is Coming. It's my mission through this podcast to help single women, specifically female leaders, get powerful, soul-expanding relationships that revolutionize your growth, impact, and happiness during your time on planet Earth. Let's get straight to it. Welcome to the very first episode of season 6 of the Love is Coming podcast. And I have got a juicy one for you today. We are hearing from a former client of mine, Kerry. And I promise you, you are going to learn a lot from her journey and what she has to share. And you're also going to be very entertained, I guarantee it. So stick around. So firstly, Kerry, how are you today?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm actually really excited to be on. I've been... When did I sign up to your course? 2020. So it's been a long journey of knowing you and your work. But I used to listen to your podcast regularly. And when you had ex-clients come on, at that point, I was single. And I remember thinking, like, I'm going to be on that one day talking about, like, my dream partner. And then this morning I was like, oh, my God.
Oh, my God. You're living the visualization. So you actually taught me something that I feel quite ashamed that I hadn't heard before. A log line, okay? Yeah. Can you explain firstly what a log line is and then say your log line and then explain what it is, and then we're going to get into the juiciness of the episode.
Yeah, so like I know with when I've listened in the past, you always ask people to kind of like give their story in like a sentence, and then I'm a playwright, and you often, when you pitch a new idea to a producer or whatever, you have to give them a log line. So the log line for my life would be from promiscuous party girl to partnered up, pregnant, professional playwright.
That would all be the P's.
All the P's. And yeah, so a log line is just like, you should be able to, like, any idea you have, you should be able to pitch it in a sentence, which is like the theme of that. So that's the theme of my life. But yeah, if you're pitching an idea, and it's actually really good if you're a creative person, or like, sometimes I think you spoke about this once, about like having chapters in your life. Mm. And I'm due to give birth in about 7 weeks. And I was like thinking about, yeah, like this next chapter of being a mum, and thinking of like what I want to call in for that, and then letting go of like old chapters. I think sometimes it's quite nice to have like a log line for like the next 6 months.
Next chapter.
Yeah, you know, that like chapter, because you can't have it all the time. Mm-hmm. And it's going, okay, what am I going to...
What's the priority?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, like you said, so just for context, everyone, Kerry, yeah, you joined in, I think it was April 2020. So that was 4 years ago now. A lot has happened in that time. And just because we're going to be talking about something so that you understand what on earth we're talking about, I used to have a program called Get Your Soulmate, which was an 8-week course. And that primarily focused on healing your relationship with yourself and really taking responsibility for how you've been showing up in your love life in ways that are unhealthy, ineffective, etc. And we had hundreds and hundreds of women go through that course. It was amazing, amazing community. Women became best friends. They've gone to each other's weddings. It really was such a special container.
Yeah.
And then we created 2 follow-up programs, Get Your Soulmate Accelerator, which was basically around, right, okay, once you've really worked on that relationship with you, how do you then attract and like date more effectively? And then because so many of my clients then got into new relationships and then they started struggling there, we created another container called Commit, which helped, you know, basically what, you know, the transitioning from the dating to the committed relationship and how to navigate particularly all the shit that comes up in those first year. So in the last 2 years, we've been merging all of those 3 separate programs into one. And that's my flagship program, Love for Leaders. And essentially what that does is it helps women who identify as high achieving or career focused like myself, from being really stuck and miserable in romance to getting a healthy, exciting, meaningful, what I call true power couple relationship that's a force for good, not drama. And just so anyone listening, if you're listening, this is going to be released on the 16th of April, 2024, God willing. And so we're about to start on the 24th of April, we're starting a brand new, a brand new live round of this. And you can check out the show notes for all the information here. Okay, so I just wanted to, and if you're listening at a later time, this is absolutely going to be relevant, this conversation. You're going to get so much out of it. Just wanted to give you a little bit of context. Okay, now that bit's out of the way. What I want to go back to, Kerry, is the version of you, because you really have gone through so much of a journey in the last few years. So let's go back to where you were before you joined Get Your Soulmate. Like, where were you in your love life? How was it? What were you experiencing? Share with us.
So I'm 36 now. I had the most horrendous breakup when I was 29. It was the year from hell. I had a complete mental breakdown.
What year would that have been? Like
2017.
Right, okay.
And I was with a guy who I thought was the love of my life. Looking back, he really wasn't. But at that time, I was so in love with him. And then we'd been together for almost a year, met in a festival. It was very like, you know, met straight away, got together straight away. It was this whirlwind, like fireworks, amazing thing. But I had undiagnosed bipolar at that time. And then it was all like my personal life was unraveling, work was, everything was unraveling. And I was trying to like grasp onto this relationship. And like, you know, through GYS, and I've forgiven him now and whatever, but he did end it with me the same time I got my diagnosis. And my whole life just like fell apart. I'm from Pembrokeshire in West Wales, where I now live, but I was living in London at the time. And then that was the beginning for me of my personal development journey, but also the beginning of me having to redefine my life with this diagnosis. But for me, I don't know, this podcast isn't about mental health, mental illness, but if anyone's listening who does suffer with stuff, for me, it helped so much because my life made sense. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, the ups, the downs, this, that, that makes sense to me. So it was literally like, and yeah, I'm an actor and a playwright, and I've written a play called Bipolar Me. And like it says in it, like I found a fun word that's me. This is me and I get it. And it was like, so that all made sense. And then I changed loads of stuff in my life that year. Like I was an actor, but failing, not even jobbing, just failing, working in a bar. I thought, you know what, fuck it. And I went and worked in a school full time as a teaching assistant. And then I thought, I'm going to go and train and be a teacher. But part of that kind of toxic relationship was my ex saying to me, like, you know, you can't call yourself a fucking actor, you haven't made any money from it, blah, blah, blah. Like, and I thought I didn't want to act because he didn't want me to. But then once I was free of that, went to work in a school, and then was like, no, I want to act. And I went back to acting classes. I relaunched my career and I started to really focus on me. So that was the beginning. And then I also used to have a nanny business in London. That was started to go well. I started to earn more money than ever. I just felt more settled. And I was honestly genuinely happy for a while being single because I needed that. And like, okay, I wasn't an angel. I was like, I had things in my life to keep me happy, but like I wasn't really on the lookout for anyone. But I was also unhappy in terms of like, I guess I wasn't settled. And then it wasn't until the Christmas before the pandemic. And I'd had a break. Like, I'd been traveling in Colombia with my best mate. I'd written a play about being bipolar, set up my own theatre company. Things were happening. I was like, oh my God. I came home to Pembrokeshire and it was Christmas 2019. My mum was like, you've been single a couple of years now, you know, your early 30s. Like, and I was like, yeah, I am ready to meet someone. And we went to a school reunion and everyone was in a relationship. It was just like eight of us. We all sat around the kitchen table and everyone went round talking about how they met their, I think most of them were engaged even. And then they got to me and everyone just gave me a kind of like sympathetic, like, look, I moved on. And I was like, fuck you all. Like, I've just set up my own theatre company, smashed it, blah, blah, blah. No one's asking me about work. And I remember like leaving that and crying and then being like, okay. So then I was like, right, I'm going to start dating. And then 3 months later, the pandemic hit. But looking back, and I was thinking about it this morning before coming on the podcast, cleaning my teeth, I'm like, I needed like, I mean, the pandemic was awful in some ways, but then in other ways, like, had I gone into dating with all of the fucked up thoughts I had about it and myself in my 20s, I wouldn't be where I am now. Mm-hmm. And I probably wouldn't have signed up to your course if it hadn't been for the pandemic. So there's loads of things that, like, and I can't even remember how I found it. I was thinking about this morning. I think, like, I'd started to do some personal development stuff with someone called Rachel Welford. I can always put her links in the show notes, and she's a friend of mine, but she started talking to me about stuff and I began that journey. I think it just must have been the algorithm and yours just came up, and then I went on your Instagram and I think you were doing some like free content and it all just resonated with me. And then from then, yeah, like doing that course, I mean, that's why I've messaged you so many times over the last few years. Like, it changed my life and made me dig deep, but it still took. I did the course in 2020 and I met my partner in early 2023. So it was 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
3 years. And if you said to me, you will meet the love of your life, it would be 3 years, I'd be like, I want my money back. But actually, I needed that time. And I think that's like one of the things that I think if you're listening and you're like, where is he? I was one of those. I literally was like, you know, so impatient. But now I'm like, oh, actually, I needed to.
Why. It's really interesting because the women in my programs, it's so interesting. And I always, at the beginning, in the first session, I say, I'm going to just tell you, because I've been doing this now since 2012. It's a long time and I've seen it all. And I've seen it in myself and I've seen it in clients. The clients who, a lot of clients do manifest the partner very quickly. And whilst on an ego level, that's great for me. And like for testimonials, it's great. Let's be honest. What I have seen is actually in the bigger picture, it's not, because 9 times out of 10, let's say 8 times, the person is not ready. Like they kind of, they go, oh, it's worked. And then they stop doing the work and they disappear. And then they come back later with the tail between the legs, oh, it didn't work out or whatever. It's because it's like, hold on, don't stop doing the thing that's worked. Like don't, yeah. The minute you lose yourself to it, it's like, you know, you're kind of not prioritizing yourself anymore. That's when it all falls to shit. So for some people, it takes longer. For some people, it takes short. And everyone's on their own journey. But what inevitably happens, especially, let's be honest, if you have a group of women, is that when some people start, and you remember it from when you did it, when some people start getting the partners, of course, that triggers the comparison. They're like, oh, it's not working for me. Oh, it's not going to work for me. All this doesn't, whatever it is. And it's like, you know, I talk a lot about surrendering to the festival. It's like, just stay in your own lane, keep it in the day and do what you need to do. And you've got to, like, it's the hardest thing to trust.
Yeah, no, it is. And also I think, like, it's hard, but like to own your shit. Like I remember, so I did the course and so you offered a free, I can't remember, it was like a free seven day kind of mini thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really competitive. That's like sometimes my negative and sometimes positive. And you offered like 3 prizes. One was like a book, one was a free session with you, and one was the course for free.
Mm-hmm.
So I like threw myself into the free course. And I think the more engaged you were, then you like win a prize. And I was like, I'm going to win, GYS. And then I didn't. I got the second prize, which was a Zoom with you, which was amazing. And I did sign up to GYS and I paid for it. And we'll talk about that later because we're chatting a bit about that. Like, I think actually, I'm really glad that I didn't win it and that I had to pay for it because it made me take it more seriously. But on the Zoom with you, you were like, slow down, don't date at all for the next 8 weeks. And like, because I am very, I'm very ambitious and I'm very like, if I put my mind to something, generally I do it. And they're like big things, you know, like I'm from like a working class mountain in Wales. And I'm now like a professional playwright and lived in London for years as an actor. Like if I give myself a goal, I do it. So I was like, my goal for this year is to meet a man. So the pandemic happened. And I was like, well, I'm going to do this 8 week course and then meet him. And I still was dating on the apps and like, and actually didn't fully invest in the course. And like slowing down is so important. And then I did the course a second time and I had progressed, but was still making mistakes. And then I didn't do all of the course before I met my partner because I felt like I'd done a lot of the weeks 1, 2, 3, where it's digging deep and quite honestly, you can feel a bit shit because all your stuff comes to the surface. I was like, oh, I don't need to do that. I'm good. And I jumped in and did half of it, which is where you really focus about what you want. And I got really, really clear on what I wanted in a relationship and then was like, right, okay, anything that doesn't meet that, I am going to just walk away from. So I think it took me doing the course, like, and I dipped, like sometimes I would just dip back in at points in my life where I'd be like, hang on a minute, okay, what's going on? You saw that red flag and you chose to ignore it. And like, I think before, so like for context, I lived in London for 13 years. And so after the pandemic, I was in West London for years in Kensal Rise. And a lot of my girls.
Which is, by the way, where we lived as well.
Yeah.
So at the time. Yeah.
Yeah, so much. I love
when you joined the course.
And I was Portobello Road for years, blah, blah, blah. And all my girls who were like, I knew from my 20s, we were all drinking and having fun in Portobello, had settled down and met partners. And I was the last single one. And it, you know, it was it was sometimes hard. And to be honest, like, I love my girls to bits and they're still my best mates, but I was bored. Like, when we'd meet up for like a Sunday lunch, there'd be babies everywhere and their partners, and then I'd be on like a, you know, hangover, I'd have come down the night before, and I just wasn't really relating to them that much. And I was like, I'm gonna move east. And I really do think that you're given what you need at that time. And then I fell into this group of like party people that were all sort of polyamorous, very pro-sex and very like going to raves. And I needed that at that point in my life because I was bored with my other friends. Like, they just weren't, they were still my friends and I loved them, but they're talking about nappies and I'm talking about like techno or house that night. You know, it's just, we just weren't bonding. And then I met a group, like, beautiful group of people. But through them actually being really open as well, because some people are really anti-polyamorous relationships. It's not for me. Like, I have read on it and thought, could I do that? I couldn't. That's me personally. But they communicate so well, because actually there's a lot of stigma around people who choose to date that way. But my God, they communicate their needs and their boundaries. And like, that taught me a lot from living in a house with two people that were dating and were polyamorous and that whole circle. But then I was like, do you know what? I think it was a year and it was a brilliant year. And I needed that because I have no like doubts or fears now about moving into the next stage of motherhood and commitment, because I did it and I fully embraced that year. And then, but I was dating and I was like, no, I do want a relationship. But then I was thinking, like, I'm from West Wales. Do I want to stay in London? So I made a massive jump in my life and moved home to West Wales the day before my 35th birthday. From then, I think for me, being out of the city was really positive. And then I made massive changes. But moved back, it was funny because I moved back and I'm pro the apps as long as you're in a good space for them. So what I learned from the course was, like, I would try not to just, I mean, I have done it where you pick up your phone and you're feeling shit about yourself and you just swipe through, you get some likes and then you feel good about yourself. But what I tried to do was kind of intentionally go on it. So I did go on the apps as soon as I moved home and met someone who was separated but still married. We had a bit of a like instant connection. It was all quite intense. But then just before Christmas, he was like, actually, I need you as a friend in my life. I am going to try. And like, him and his wife really weren't that over. And I went, old Kerry would have fought for him. I would have been like, I'm going to win him. Fuck his wife. Like, whatever. And I literally was like, okay, I met you on an app. I'm not looking for a friend. I'm looking for a partner. So I was like, I'm not going to contact you at all for the whole of January because I'm not your friend. I was like, you go and work out what you need to do. And if it's, you can work things out with your wife, then that's better because you've got a family. And like, I'm not going to stand in the way of that. And like, some people who knew me and knew him were like, whoa, that was so calm and considered. And I did it and I didn't contact him, but I didn't even have to delete his number. Old me would have had to like delete his number. I just was like, I'm not going to contact you.
That's what you're saying here is I'm really seeing is there's a maturity that happened. And so you said it took you 3 years between when you started the course and when you met your partner. Let's just clarify for the people listening. What do you think were the mistakes that you, and I'm all about, like, on one level it's mistakes, but on the other level there's no mistakes because we all learn what we need to learn at the time and at the pace that's right for us. Do you know, something very brightly. So what would you say were the key lessons that you really had to learn?
I've got a bipolar brain, so I think quickly. Like, in meetings and stuff, I have to sometimes be like, I get frustrated because people are never as fast as me. Like, I'm fast and quick. And so everything I want now. But that doesn't work when you're dating. Mm-hmm. So if I meet someone, I'd want them by like date four in the past to be like, we're together.
Yep.
Or a mistake that I definitely made that I thought I was content with, but looking back, sometimes it wasn't, is I would sleep with people too soon and then get upset because I hadn't clarified to them. Like, for me, sleeping with them, I was like, oh, we're together, but they were just looking for like a quick fuck or whatever. Mm-hmm. And actually, I remember the sentence that you taught us girls to say, which was, I just don't know how long. I used to say it in the mirror, but I haven't said it in so long now because I've been in a relationship. I don't sleep with people until we're dating exclusively. It doesn't make me feel good. And I moved into doing that by the end. So yeah, I wanted stuff too quickly. And I was also too open about stuff. I remember you talking about being graciously vague. Like, I do tell people before we commit that I'm bipolar. And to be honest, like, if you Google my name, it's so obvious anyway. So like, but I don't tell people straight away. I like date three or four now. I'll be like, oh, just so you know, you should probably know this thing about me, and if it's an issue, let's chat about it. Or, you know, but before I think I'd be like, and you need to know this, but, and like, just too much, sharing too much, which again, obviously I've told my partner like everything about my life now, but it's a year on. But, and I think just pushing, you know, like pushing for, and it totally ignoring red flags. But I think as well, a lot of the work through units one and two of the course that I did with you was looking at the way you behave because of like childhood trauma or school trauma, whatever. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And in school, I had bad acne when I was a teenager, and I wasn't fat. I thought I was looking back. I know I wasn't looking back at photos, but I was curvy and had big boobs. And so I wasn't the skinny, pretty one in the group. So I related to men by being loud, funny. Mm-hmm. And then like when I got into my teenage years, maybe promiscuous. And I guess you keep hold of that. Mm. And then like in your 20s, you go, oh, actually, I'm still playing up to what I was when I was 16. And I don't need to be the loud, funny, promiscuous mm-hmm. party girl. Mm-hmm. And then through work I did with you and therapy, I realized like sometimes I'd jump up on the table and be the one doing shots and dancing because that's what people expect of me. And I think that's why I related to you as well, because you're really honest about, yeah, and you know, used to be an actor, and I think sometimes I played up to this idea of what people thought Kerry Ash was. And then actually when, like, I stopped drinking for a while, and I remember this girl that I knew in the friendship group but was not super close, she was like, you're so much nicer than I thought you were, because like I didn't let people in because it was this loud, you know, like, oh, like, and a mate of mine the other day was like, you're still you, but you're just not as unpredictable. Mm-hmm. And I actually look back because there's a Facebook group for the women that did the course that I did through GYS. And I look back at some of the posts, like when I first joined, and I cringe, like I'm so embarrassed, but I'm like, fuck it. Like that was a safe place for me to go through that. Mm-hmm. And I guess, yeah, like, and all, yeah, so expecting too much, sleeping with them too soon, and not being honest about what I wanted. So like if a guy was like, oh, I'm looking for casual, I'd be like, oh yeah, yeah, me too. And I was like, I wasn't looking for casual, like I really liked him. Mm-hmm. And since I started to be more honest, I then, you know, I mean, it took a lot of falling down and picking myself back up, but I definitely started to date more intentionally. And I ended it with some people, which I never would have done before. Mm. And like, trigger warning for anyone's listening about abuse. But yeah, I was in an abusive relationship mid-20s where, you know, he hit me and I still stayed with him. And I looked back and I was like, I actually found an old journal the other day. And I was reading a post and I was like, I wanted to go back and like hug 25-year-old Kerry, because I was like, oh my God, you were such a hot mess, but you had so much to offer and you didn't realise. But you have, like, I'm not saying everyone has to go through an abusive relationship, but you have to go through these things to then go, oh, like, oh, I needed that. So like, but I think as well, yeah, it's so interesting because I just thought I would do the course and meet the man mm-hmm. because I'm very quick with everything in my life. Mm-hmm. But then weirdly, when it can come on to my partner, I call him Sol, that's his nickname. I won't say his full name, Sol. Like, it was slow.
Yeah.
And I looked back through our messages because I asked him this morning, like, is there anything you don't want me to say? And he was like, no, like, you know, we're like an open book. But there was loads of things that a old Kerry would have walked away from. Like he'd just come out of a really long relationship. And so I was like, red flag, no way. But he was like, oh, we're really good friends. We always will be. And I was like, but actually we are. Like, I'm going around there, her house for dinner next week, the three of us. She's come around here. We're all really mature with it. And yes, of course, it's been painful for her to see him move on, but they're friends. And like, I was, I'm an actor and I was doing a panto before Christmas. And I had to work right up to Christmas. He's from Swansea, she's from Swansea. So she was like, oh, I'm driving up, do you want a lift? And I was like, oh God, yeah, saves you getting awful like Christmas trains with all the presents and stuff. And the girls that were in the panto with me in the dressing room were all doing our makeup, and they were like, they're 25, like, they're just younger than me. They were like, what? He's in the car with his ex-girlfriend right now and you don't care? Like, what if they, I was like, what if they what? Like, are they going to pull over on the side of the road and have a quickie? Like, I doubt it. And if they do, that's going to happen anyway. Like I just was like, for me, I was like, yeah, he doesn't have to drive. She's going to drop him off. They're friends anyway. He doesn't have to carry the Christmas presents. I'm at work. Like, but old me definitely would have been the same as them and been like, no way. Like, and I was like, okay, she's happy to try. I felt more sad for her because I was like, is she going to be okay dropping you off for Christmas? Quite emotional for her. Like, you broke up this time last year. But like, there's so many things that I'm like, oh, when the person does come into your life, you're like, if I hadn't done the work, these things would have triggered the fuck out of me.
Yeah.
And absolutely. Obviously, we have moments, obviously, like the early days when I was a bit like, oh, and I had to dig deep and be like, he's being really honest with you. He's telling you he's going for a walk with her. Like, that's fine. You don't own him. He can do what he wants and he's being honest with you. Like, this is your shit, not theirs. And owning your shit is like a big thing. And that's why I like your work, because I remember when, you won't remember this, but there was a time when I was really mad at you. And it was after I'd done the course the first time, and I emailed in because you were like, you can email in questions that you answer on the live. And I was like, well, I'm really stressed out because I've done the course, but now, like, how am I going to meet him? Because I meet people on a night out, but there's no nights out and it's all online. I don't want an online date. And you were like, I'm not going to say who this is, but this person is not ready. And I was like, what does she fucking mean I'm not ready? I've done the fucking course, I've paid the money. Yeah. And I remember literally being like, oh, like, literally was like, for a week, I was like, I didn't even want to talk to Bridget. I'm like, because obviously someone you said had triggered me. And then I was like, yeah, I wasn't ready, because I was literally like, where is he? Like, yeah.
That energy doesn't work. I just want to touch down, because there is a lot that you shared there. And I actually have got 10 different lessons that you learned between, I guess, doing the course and when you met your partner. And I want to share these because this is going to be really useful for people listening. So the first thing you said was about slowing down, and you've kind of just touched on it again there at the end. And it was a lesson I really had to learn. When we are coming from that place of, I need it, I've done the work and I need it now, it's like, you are not ready.
Yeah.
Because someone who is ready is very much like, I know what I want and I trust it will come when the time is right. That energy, that relaxed energy, that trusting energy, which, by the way, the irony is we have to work so hard to get to that place of slowing down and trust and surrender.
Yeah, and if you're mid-30s or early 30s, I understand that that is
it's really hard.
It's but really also hard. Like, yeah, you know.
It's the only way. It's the only way. So on that, following on from that, was about not sleeping. Well, this was like a two-part one. Not sleeping with someone too fast or expecting too much. So I think that the lesson there is, I mean, it links to the slowing down. And I don't want to get too much into the sleeping too fast thing, because that's a whole other episode. In fact, I probably will do an episode on that soon, because that was, both of you and me had that in common. Mm. We jumped into bed straight away. Everyone is always asking, like, how long should I wait? How long should I wait? And in a nutshell, it's not about how long you wait. There's a lot more to it than that. But what you said about, you know, don't expect, just because you've, it, like, having sex means something to you, that it's going to be the same with the other person. You've got to have a conversation, and we talk all about how to do that. So then the other third thing was being graciously vague, which is a term I learned from a healer called Wendy Mandy. And graciously vague, as you know, both Kerry and I identified as being a massive oversharer. And I thought that was my superpower. And I was like, oh, it's me being authentic. It's me being vulnerable. Mm. No, it wasn't. Because if I'm honest, and it sounds like you were the same, it's like I was oversharing because I had an agenda. Mm. I was like, I want, if I share all this about me, you're going to be impressed, or you're going to feel sorry for me, or whatever it is. And actually, a woman who respects herself, you know, you don't, with a complete stranger, you don't share everything straight away, actually. It's about discernment, which is a really big thing that we talk about in Love for Leaders. The fourth thing that was a really good one was about the pushing and the forcing, which again, and you know, women who identify like you and I do, high achieving, ambitious, career focused, that energy, that very masculine energy has got us somewhere in our career. Like, it's got us results. But actually in our dating life, coming from that masculine energy just doesn't work. And actually the irony is it intensifies your anxiety when you're in that pushing, forcing. The fifth thing you talked about was ignoring red flags, which is something we all do, because again, when we're coming from that desperate place, and so, you know, and you know, with red flags, a red flag doesn't necessarily mean a make or a break. Like, my husband had a few things that I would call red flags. So it doesn't necessarily mean you walk away. But the key thing is that you said is, like, not to ignore them. Don't just go, and just sweep them under the carpet. Like, actually acknowledge them, because a red flag requires a conversation.
Yeah, definitely.
The sixth thing that I loved that you talked about was around the identity piece. And so both you and I really, like, a lot of our identity was around being the larger than life, being, you know, I remember, I'll never forget this, actually, this phrasing made me die. When I did a play at uni, I was the mum, the lead role in Blood Brothers. And one of the reviews said, larger than life Lawson. And I just love the alliteration, but I was like, oh God, it's like cringe, but true. Like that's what it what I was like. And I prided myself on it. But again, it was like hiding. It was a way to hide my vulnerability and like being this loud, rash person. I can get the guy, like I have complete control. And actually it was like, no, it's because I feel so shit about myself that I'm like hiding behind this identity and this promiscuity and telling myself it's about freedom and like I'm liberated. It's like, no, because a truly liberated woman does not feel the need to disrespect herself in the way that I was. And it sounds like you were as well. Mm-hmm. Like, so that was really interesting. Another piece, I think this was number 7 or 6, can't remember, not being honest, which links to the expecting too much. It's like, you've got to be honest, firstly with yourself about what it is that you want. And then secondly, you've got to like, and this is where the skill set comes in, because we're not taught around how to have like effective communications in any area of our life, really. So that's about upgrading your skill set. The next thing you talked about is like, really it's the clarity piece about dating more intentionally, like knowing this is what I desire and being really clear with yourself and with the other person. Like, and this links to the next thing you talked about, boundaries and self-respect. Like if something is not feeling good or, you know, something is not matching up for you, you've got to like, really like firstly know what your boundaries are and then implement them and have those difficult conversations. And then the last thing you talked about, which I loved, was owning your shit, because that never stops, does it? You've got to own your shit right at the start, and then you have got to constantly own your shit in the relationship.
And like that's like a whole other podcast, but like I think there's so much you can, you have to do the personal development, I think, to know yourself before you meet someone that it works with. But then like Sol has shined a light on shit that I didn't know I even had. And then same with him. And like, of course, like we've been together just over a year now, and like stuff have moved fast. So I will explain a bit later. But like the other day, we had our first big, big fight. We've had disagreements before, but like I was crying. I stormed off, slammed the bathroom door, locked the door. He was banging on the door. I was like, and then I was like aggressively scrubbing the bathroom because I was like tears by my face, bump. Like, and I just took a deep breath. I was like, hang on a minute, you're going back into the drama. Like, you want to fight with him right now? Why? Mm. And I took a deep breath. I opened the door. I was like, okay. And we both sat on the sofa and ended up crying for 2 hours. And a load of shit came up of like, a lot has happened quite quickly in our relationship. Partly our own fault. Something's not our own fault. Like GP's telling you you're infertile when you're not. And I was like, ah. But yeah. And then, so we were both like, yeah. And actually we had a fight because we're both terrified because we've got 7 weeks left and we're about to be parents. And we've just bought a house together and we've gone from discussing what was supposed to be a trip to Asia to mortgages and how we're going to, you know, and we suddenly both sat there in tears. And then we were like, oh, that argument was not, I can't even remember what we started fighting about. I genuinely can't. And I realized though that like, you do fall back into like old patterns, but it's like in that moment, oh my shit, dig deep and be like, hang on, you don't want to push him away right now. You're both trying to communicate something. And then like, yeah, we both sat there in tears for like 2 hours, like just talking about stuff that and sharing stuff that was, I found stuff hard to hear. And he found stuff hard to hear. And then it was like, whoa, we needed that. And then like, there's a lot of stuff that, yeah, like when we moved from, not only did we move from honeymoon to being in a full relationship, we quickly moved from honeymoon to me being pregnant. Mm-hmm. So it was double whammy, but he's amazing. Like I listened to a podcast, I can't remember what it was now, about that, about like, if you can work through losing the honeymoon, that's when the real relationship starts.
And my gosh, that is so true. You know, and actually on that note, I want to share a perspective around this that I really, really love around the honeymoon phase, because this actually blew my mind when I heard it. Marianne Williamson talks about this in her book, Enchanted Love. And she says, you know, the world tells us that the honeymoon phase is you and you're completely in fantasy and, you know, you're seeing this person, the best of them, and they're seeing, and you're in this like kind of heightened state, but it's not real. What happens then, like a few months in, reality sets in. And she says on a spirit, oh God, I actually get tingles whenever I say this, on a spiritual level, it's the opposite, is that when you're in that honeymoon phase where you're both loved up and you're like, you know, feel like you're constantly on ecstasy, That's actual reality. And then what happens is fear sets in. You normalize to each other, and like the honeymoon effect wears off, but actually unreality sets in. And I really loved that. Like, I love that perspective shift of, you know, and I think that it's probably a little bit of both. I think that, you know, what we have to be really, and I teach a lot about this in the program, but like, we have to stay grounded in that honeymoon phase, because what can happen is we can get so woo, and then we have no boundaries, we rush into things and all of that. So it's important to stay grounded. But it's really important that when you're past the honeymoon phase in the traditional sense, that you have to work really hard to see the amazingness of your partner like you did at the beginning. And also to do that, it requires you to see the amazingness in yourself, because what happens is the further you get into the relationship, all your stuff comes up, all your triggers, all your fears. And that's why I had to create this third program, Commit, which is now part of Love for Leaders, because so many, and I said this to my clients, I was like, you're going to get what you want and then you're going to want to run for the hills.
Oh my God, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And it's like no one teaches you how to navigate that bit.
Yeah. No, I had it. So it was so interesting because we're talking about chapters, and I fully think that you have to go through certain chapters to then be ready for the relationship. But I remember you once said, I can't remember where or when it was, not to me, and like personally on a podcast or something, about like, you will look back in the chapter you're in now and miss it when you're in a relationship. And I was like thinking like, fucking, what's she on about? She can say that because she's with Joey and it's perfect. But you know, you like things trigger you. Makes me sound like I really hate you. I don't. I think you're amazing. But I remember thinking that, oh. And actually, like, I sat in my, I'm so lucky. I've got a writing cabin at my parents' house. Because when I was living in London, they built me this little shed, basically, for me to write in when I come home. It's stunning. It's like got sea views. So I was sitting there and I'd gone to stay with my parents for a couple of weeks, had a massive writing deadline. And I've told my partner this, so he won't mind me sharing. I also was like, I need to be by myself. I feel like I mean, I'll talk about this a bit later, but like the pregnancy has been really, really hard. I've had hyperemesis, which is constant sickness. Work has been so full on. And then I was also like, we were supposed to go to Vietnam before I got pregnant. We were going to Vietnam and Thailand and Hong Kong for a month to have like an adventure. And then we were going to come back and start trying. Everything happened sooner because I got told by a GP that I would have massive issues getting pregnant because of a thyroid issue. And so we stopped being careful. We weren't trying. We were like, oh, okay, well, she said it's going to take 6 months to a year. Should we just start trying now? One try.
Wow, one hit wonder.
fucking pregnant. So we were like suddenly catapulted into this world of, okay, it's happened way sooner, we're not going to Asia. And that was hard. Like, both of us were gutted. Like, we cannot wait to meet our baby and we're so excited. But yeah, so we had to dig deep. And then I went back to my cabin and I sat there and I had this massive cry. And I was like things were not hard between us, but we had a lot to process. We were like buying a house together. Like, it's a lot of stuff.
Grown up stuff.
It's grown up shit. That's not fun. Mm. It's not sexy. It's like, how are we going to divide our finances? And like, that's, and even stuff like that. Like, yeah, he earns more than me. So we were like, okay, this is how we're going to split it. And then when I'm back at work, this is what we're going to do. And all of that is like, takes a lot of courage to be like, this is what I would expect from you if I'm giving up work and things like that. And then, yeah, I just went back and I just needed space. And then I like sat in my cabin and was like, oh my God, I'd love to be on the beach right now in Colombia with my best mate without a care in the world, with the biggest decision of like, should we book a nice hotel tonight or a hostel, or should we get a pina colada or a bloody margarita or whatever? And I was like, fuck, like, I'm so glad that I did embrace that. And like, shout out, I know you and her friends, Ashley Louise James, I loved her content, and now she's become more of a mummy blogger, but if you look back at her old stuff, she totally embraced the chapters and DJed and traveled. And I feel like that, like, I don't feel like there's nothing that I've missed out on, because I did then eventually embrace my single life. Like, my last year of being in London, I was like, do you know what, sod it, like, I've still got a year left of raving in me, and I've still got like a year left of like having fun trips, and like, I'd saved a lot of money in the pandemic, and I this time 2 years ago, I did a massive trip, solo trip, went to New York by myself. Then I met a friend in San Diego who was putting on like a mini Burning Man festival in the desert. Went to the desert, met loads of incredible people, and then went down to Mexico by myself. And I remember on that trip, I was staying in a hostel. I was like 34, was I? Something? 33, 34. And I was the old one in the hostel. And I was ready at that point of like, oh, the next time I do a trip, it would be nice to stay in like a hotel or with my partner, or, but I needed that, and like I did it, and I had a great time, and I was, yeah, I was by myself in Mexico, had like a holiday romance with this gorgeous Mexican man, like just had a great time. And I'm like, I'm so glad I did that, because I'm ready now. And like, yeah, like I think it's so hard in that time. And I was on the fence for a little bit about wanting kids, but then I got clear and I was like, no, I do want to have a child. And I understand, like, if you're listening and you're 25, it's completely different to listening if you're mid-30s.
Mm-hmm.
And the biological clock and that pressure. But I think, you could have a child by yourself if that was a choice. You could freeze your eggs. You might meet someone who's got children when you're 45 and end up being the best stepmom. Like, sometimes things just look differently to the way they're going to be. And, like, being a mum, like, yeah, it's a funny one. Because I moved back, like I said, October 2022, and it was really scary. It was pissing it down because I love Pembrokeshire, but in the winter it's depressing. Pissing it down, all of my stuff was in boxes. I'd left London, which was really emotional for me, but I just was like, things were starting to work in Wales. I was getting a name as an actor and a writer, and I was like, why am I struggling so much to live in like one of the most expensive cities in the world? So I moved home, I took the leap, and I said, right, I'm gonna stay a year. But after 3 to 6 months, I'll assess. But I'm going to force myself to stay a year.
Mm.
I'm going to give up the day jobs, and I'm going to put all of my energy, because I was trying to nanny, run a nannying business, teach, act, write, interacting and writing. I'm not going to do anything that is not creative for a year. I understand that I'm in the privileged position that my parents were like, you can live at home for a year. But I was 35, living in their spare bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
Like no annex, nothing. Like just in the spare room, all my shit in boxes, the rest in my sister's garage. And I was like, oh my God, I was terrified. But then work went really, really well. And I did really focus on myself. And then from that, I met Sol. And like, it annoys me when people are like, oh, of course you're going to stay now. And I'm like, well, I'm actually staying because I'm a really successful actor and writer in Wales. And I've got a name and I'm going from job to job to job, which isn't happening in London.
Mm-hmm.
So if I hadn't met Sol, I would have stayed because work was going really well. But from that, I did meet him. And obviously, like, you know, he is obviously a part of me wanting to stay and I'm happy. But I was definitely in a place of like calm and focused on like me and my work. And then there's a local artist in Pembrokeshire called Di Ford who did a manifesting like January New Year collage workshop. So I knew some stuff. I didn't have an acting agent at the time, and I wrote acting agent on a bit of paper and stuck it on this collage. I also wrote like pictures of me on a stage. But there's some things that I was like, I want that and that and that, all work-based. Then I put like a picture of like an exotic beach so that I want to go traveling again. And then she was like, if you don't know if you want something, there's loads of images around the on like stuck on the wall, pick one up and just see what it comes up in you. And if you feel drawn to that, then that's a message, because you're not sure what you want. So at that point, I was unsure. I was thinking, I'm 35, like, do I want to have children or not? And do I want to like call that in? And I held a picture of there's like, my friend posted it when she had a baby. It was like her husband's hand, her hand and the baby's hand. So that was one of the pictures on the wall.
Mm.
So I looked at that and I was like, oh, that's not my friend's photo. And then I picked it up and I had floods of like tears and felt really emotional. I was like, okay, I'm going to put it on. And I think that is something I do want. So The reason I'm saying is because then, I think it was a couple of weeks later, a friend of mine had cancelled on me. It was really depressing, midwinter in Wales. And I thought, I'm going to go on the apps and just see who's about. I had ended it with the man that was separated but married, and he and I met the end of January, and he was like, yeah, I'm sorting things out with my wife, and thank you so much for giving me the space for that. And I was like, that's fine, like, we can be friends now, no problem. But and I let him go graciously. I was like, he taught me a lot, we're still friends now, like, and yeah. So I was swiping through, and then it's really funny because his name came up, and my ex who broke my heart was called Martin, and I thought, oh, I can't. But then I looked at his post and his profile, I thought, oh, yeah, actually, yeah, he actually seems like my kind of person. So we matched, and it's so funny because we we messaged. I messaged him first, which I'm, again, like, I'm just, for me, I don't want to message strangers for ages. So I used to say, after a couple of, like, days messaging, I'd go, hey, call me old-fashioned, but I'm much rather chatting in person, or at least over the phone, fancier chat or meeting. Because if they went no, I would just be like, sod it. Because I didn't see that as pushy, and I made it jokey. I think I used to say something like, yeah, I think I was like, hey, call me old-fashioned, but I actually like a conversation, or something jokey, you know? And friends of mine have actually stolen that sentence and used it. And then so I messaged him, but we'd been back and forth a few sentences, and we both said we were having a chilled weekend. So he'd said, yeah, yeah, nothing, no plans, chilling. I was like, yeah, me too. So I went, oh, well, should we meet up tomorrow then? And he was like, he said he was in like the car park at Halfords. And he hadn't been single for that long and was dipping his toe in sort of tentatively and hadn't been on an online date ever in his life, but couldn't say no because he'd said he had no plans. So he was like, oh, fuck. So we met up the next day for a walk in the pissing rain along the coast of Wales, and then had like a pint in a pub and then walked home. And it's so funny because on the walk, he said to me that he had not long broken up with a partner of 15 years, but they are friends, but they just fell out of love. So because I'd just been with someone that I'd got not burnt with, but I was like, oh, no. And I kind of thought, but we've got a lot in common. I would be his friend. So I went home, I was living with my mum, and she was like, oh, how was it? Because she's like, you know, just wants me to settle down. And I was like, oh, yeah, I don't know if I'll see him again, but it was a really nice afternoon. And because I'd messaged him first on the apps, I thought we'd swap numbers, and I thought, if he messages me, great, and if he doesn't, fine. And he messaged me that night, and he was making me laugh, and like, I'm really into numerology, and I was reading Cosmic Code. I think she was on your podcast. Mm-hmm. And so I said that, and he was messaging me going, oh, I'm really intrigued, can you send me my numbers? And like, we were bonding over that, and we just got on. And then I was going back to London for a 3-week acting job, and I said to him, like, well, I'm going away now, but I'll shout you when I'm back. And then he kind of, in a cute way, suggested about us meeting up at this. He was like, oh, if you happen to be free on Wednesday, then I'm going to this open mic. And I was like, all right, yeah, okay. And I was really nervous on that day, because I thought, oh, he is nice. And he was a bit nervous. And we just got on really well. We had a little kiss, and that was that. And I went to London. And I was saying to the girls, oh, I've met this guy twice in Wales. But we messaged every day. But it was calm, and it was like, I didn't, it was slow. So 2 dates went. And then I was away a lot because I was a bit, my mental health wasn't great. And I was like, oh, I need to see old friends. So I was in London for work, and then I was going up to Manchester to see some friends. So we couldn't actually meet. So it was just slow. But before, I think we'd met 3 times. Yeah, we'd met 3 times, but really chilled daytime dates. So the first was a walk and a daytime pint. The second one was a open mic night, but like in Wales, there's no public transport, so you have to drive home. So there wasn't like in London where like you end up having 5 pints and suddenly you're back at theirs and you've had sex and you're like, oh shit. So, but I was also in that mental state then that I wouldn't have done it at that time, but like years ago. And then I was away, and my friend had a baby that hadn't, like, the baby was one, which hadn't met. So me and him ended up texting about that, and we'd met up 3 times, and the 3rd date was like a lunch in a library, like really chilled.
So I'm hearing is that's really important here is there was a detachedness. There was a detached way that you weren't, it was flowing, and you were kind of bold in one area, like in one aspect of saying, you like, yeah, let's meet up. But that you were also detached from it. Yeah. And that is so key. It's what I had with my now husband, Joe, and it's like, and you can only be detached when you're genuinely spent time on your own. You're clear, like all of those other, that I would say that is the 11th. We're going for 11 love lessons.
Yeah.
The 11th is the detachedness, being detached. And so we've got to start wrapping up in a moment. But what I want to say is, so it seems completely unrelated, but we were talking about this before we press record, and I think it's worth talking about because I'm very open about this, and a lot of people are very uncomfortable to talk about it. And I used to be, and I'm not anymore. I want to talk about money, which might seem like it's got nothing to do with love, dating, or relationships. But you've actually said quite a few things in this conversation, Kerry, linking to money. Like there's a grown-up thing of when you meet someone and you decide to like have a kid or you know, buy a house, like you were saying, like the really unsexy pieces, like you have got to talk about finances.
Yeah.
And actually, like money is something you've got to look at even before you're in the relationship. Yeah. Like you, like on a really practical level of like, how do you want to live your life? Because let's be honest, one of the main reasons people break up is around money.
Oh, but definitely.
We were talking before recording around investing in yourself. Mm. So you've invested in, like, you've talked about a lot of the investing that you did in your career. You invested a lot on your career, you know, setting up your own theatre company, doing acting classes. I think we're all very comfortable. We've been trained as humans to invest in our education and our learning, anything that we associate with career, school fees, training, whatever. But we don't think of it in the same way when it comes to romance and relationships. Mm.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, like I think two things that make or break, and I'll quickly caveat from talking about the money, is yeah, if you want a baby and you know that, so I'll just quickly say, yeah, before we slept together, which was after over a month of meeting, and that just naturally happened, so we hadn't slept together, but before our fourth date, we were texting and I was in Manchester with my friend with a baby, and I said to my friend, Blair, like, I don't know if he wants kids and I don't know if that's why him and his ex broke up, and she, what we need to ask him. And we were talking back and forth and I said, oh, I've known these girls since I was 18 and blah, blah, blah. So then I said before, I said, oh, I've just typed this and then deleted it and typed it again. But fuck it. It's come up naturally and I don't have anything to hide. I would like a family in a few years' time. But first, I want to have loads of fun with a partner and travel and be silly, blah, blah, blah. So if that's something you didn't want, we could just be friends. Phew, that said now. Thinking I'm never going to hear from him again. And he responded like a really calm message going, well, yeah, I went for a walk yesterday. I was thinking about you, make me smile a lot. I don't want to rush, but thinking about the future, family is something that I think has an appeal to me. But then, you know, and then he joked and he was like, you've only met me 3 times. You might think I'm a massive dick after date 4. And I was like, and then we went back to being jokey, but I'd said it. And so then like, he knew that about me. And then when I met him the next time for our fourth date, I said, oh, I'm sorry if that was a bit full on, but I just thought, you know, I genuinely would be friends with you if we don't want the same things. And he was like, oh, no, that's not actually why me and my ex broke up. She didn't actually want kids and I do. And I was like, oh. And so it opened this whole conversation. So we both knew. So that, yeah, when we did get pregnant sooner than we planned, we were like, well, we both knew that we wanted this. It's not like we'd been together like 6 months and had never spoken about it. So, yes, it was like, shit, it's happened sooner. But we were like, okay, fine. It's happened 6 months sooner than we thought. Not a problem. Like, and I never, ever would have had the balls to send that. And I just thought, well, if he doesn't want it, that's fine, because I'll be his friend, because it's a make or break. And the same with money. Yeah, like at the time, I did have some savings because I've been working really, really hard. And I love traveling, and it's what you value, isn't it? So I would spend money on a flight without thinking about it. Because for me, it just brings so much value to my life. So I'll save, like my first TV acting job I got, I remember that the $2,000 was in my account for about 10 minutes because I booked a flight to Australia. So I, at that time, had some savings and I was like, okay, I can afford to do this course. But I was like, and like, fuck it, let's talk about it. I think it was £700 and that was with a discount because I paid in full. And I know that it's gone up since then. And this was years ago. This was, what, 4 years ago I signed up for it. So I paid it and was like, oh God, I feel sick. And I remember telling some friends and they were like, what? And then after that, I didn't tell people because people just thought I was like, you know, that I'd been not conned. But so I, for me, like, because I paid for it, I made use of it. Mm-hmm. Whereas like, if you don't pay for something, I remember reading about like adult learning, like, yeah, you can do Duolingo on the free app, but then you forget about it. But if you've paid for a course,
you're going to show up.
10-week course in the local library, you're going to go, aren't you? Because you paid for it. And like, so for me, I think, yeah, and as women, we feel like, oh, should I invest in myself in that way? And yeah, of course, I'm not saying you have to spend money, be it £500 or £2,000 to find the right man. Some people just find it and it's easier and a book is enough for them. But if you know, you do have free content out there that, and I did that. I think I did some of your free stuff that was online. Like there was an exercise that really helped. And then you offered this like 7-day free thing. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. And I did that. And like it resonated with me and it's worked for me. And then since then I've like, you know, at the moment I'm pregnant and I've been doing hypnobirthing courses. And like I'm saying, like, because I've paid for the course,
I'm investing show in up.
It. Or yeah. Like I bought the book, I'm going to read it. But there's, you know, go to the library and find a free book. And like, and also if, like, I do understand that investing in that much seems like a lot, but when you add it up, like look at your Uber account, shows you how much you spent in a year. Like, a mate of mine actually always goes on about being broke, and she Ubers everywhere, and I'm like, get the fucking bus. Like, you know, like, and save that money. Or, like, I'm very strict with myself. Like, when I went to Australia, I had the money for the flight, but I had no money for spending. And I said, I'm not going to drink or coffees or alcohol out the house for, like, until I go. And I saved loads, because every time I went, oh, £10 in a cocktail. No, £10 in my travel fund. So, like, if you want something, and I'm not, I sound like such an old woman the other day because I was saying what young people want everything now. Like, I've only just started making a living full time from acting and writing, and I've been doing it for 10 years. And I, like, you know, now I'm like, this is my fee and whatever, which obviously means I can invest more in myself because I have more money, or I've bought a house or whatever. But, like, yeah, start small. Like, if you can't afford the course now, or if you're listening and you're like, oh my God, like, or, you know, so I think it's easy to be triggered and go, well, it sounds easy for her. Like, I'm from a working class family on a mountain in Wales. I was nannying for super rich people in London, and then they flew me around the world, and I started to save money. So I had savings at that time, but no one gave me that. And I was going to spend that money traveling, and then the pandemic didn't came. So I spent it on myself. And then since then, I've invested in other stuff. And, like, I think that, yeah, spending money on yourself, like, or therapy, or, and I would say, like, I probably got more from GYS than I have from, like, years of different therapists.
No, that's one of the interesting, that's one of the things I hear the most is I've got so many testimonials of people saying, I've done decades of therapy and I got more out of these 8 weeks or whatever.
And a therapist is what, 8 weeks an hour, times that by whatever, that's thousands of pounds.
Yeah, exactly. So listen, before I can't believe how long we've been on already.
I know.
It's absolutely flown by. So before I ask Kerry my final few quick fire questions, just a heads up again for anyone listening, make sure you check out the show notes for some amazing free resources. We've got our Love for Leaders scorecard, and this shows you how far away you are from your ideal relationship. And it gives you really bespoke to you steps that you need to take to close that gap. And it's really, really amazing. It's completely free. We also have information and a booking link for our free consultation for Love for Leaders. So go and check that out, because we are enrolling very soon. So, Kerry, before we wrap up, I call these the home straight questions. So they're quick fire. Think of the lightning round in Friends. So just the first thing that comes to your head, just like one really pithy sentence, okay?
Okay.
What, first question, what love life advice would you give to your 15-year-old self?
Don't, like, you 15 year old self, like, you are beautiful and you are funny and you don't need, like, boys or attention from boys to prove that.
Love that. I think we all needed to hear that. Stop trying so fucking hard. Okay, what is one thing people may be surprised to know about you?
God, I'm such an open book. Surprised to know about me. I'm so open about everything. I honestly don't know. But I speak Welsh, but that's not that surprising.
Oh, no. Well, I think that's quite, I didn't know that you actually spoke Welsh.
Yeah.
There we go. Okay. So before I ask you the final most important question, possibly of the whole podcast episode, where can people find out more about your work, or is there anything significant you want to mention there?
I guess if anyone's listening and, suffers with a mental illness, I'm super open about my bipolar, and my Instagram is Pop to Ping Productions, which is my theatre company, and a lot of work we do is about mental health.
We'll pop the link in the show notes.
Yeah, and then I'm on Instagram _ Kerry Ash, and yeah, I guess it's just that, yeah, I'm very open book about, I think, as well, yeah, dating with a mental illness can bring its own, what's the word? Not troubles, but, you know, for example,
there are nuances.
Yeah, like, for example, like, being promiscuous is a symptom of bipolar, you know, like, I'm not putting it all on that, but, like, I was like, oh, I didn't know that when I was on Up that loads of people do that because they're manic. Oh, that's not just my fault. So yeah, things like that.
Okay, amazing. Well, we will pop those links in the show notes. I think that's really important, what you mentioned there, because I have had quite a few people message me over the years who are bipolar, and I, that's not something I can personally speak into. So yeah, if that's you, then definitely reach out to Kerry. So the final question before we wrap up this episode, what is your number one piece of advice for any single woman who's listening to this right now, who is killing it in their career, but really struggling in their love life, what would you say to them?
Persia hasn't like told me to say this, but sign up for Love for Leaders. But no, but to take a deep breath, put pen to paper, and get really clear on what you want in the same way you would in your business or your career. And then it's baby steps to get there. So if it's like, I do want a partner and a house, and right now you're living in like a shared flat in London or whatever, to get really clear and then go, okay, what do I need to get there? So like, I think you said once, if you want to get, you know, you want to lose 2 stone, well, you're not going to do that overnight. It's the same thing. So it's like going out and buying like a dress in a smaller size and going, I'm going to be in that in a year or whatever. I'm not talking about toxic diet culture, but for example, you know, I'm just saying, if you want something, to go, to get clear on what you want, because if you don't know what you want, the universe is going to throw you loads of shit because you're not clear. So like to, and also my bit, like just to take it slow and enjoy the chapter you're in now, because you will get it one day and you'll look back and go, oh my God.
Shouldn't have wished that time away. So I really heard there, like own your desires, like own them. That's the first step. And I also heard like the almost like reverse engineering it, like what is, like how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time? So just baby steps in the direction. So once you're clear, baby steps in that direction. And then thirdly, like, yeah, enjoy where you are now, because one day, and I said this to you, Kerry, I said it to everyone over and over, I was like, do not wish this time away, because I promise you one day when you have that relationship, you're going to be looking back to this time being like, shit, I'd actually quite like, why did I wish that time away? Because it was really, really precious.
Oh, it's so true. It's so true. But I do understand that when you're listening to women that have what you want, it can be really triggering.
Yeah. And like, but you know what? Yeah. But it can be triggering, but then you can just decide, maybe I need to just stop being a victim and being triggered by this and just choose to listen to the wisdom, because I've had to learn that. I think sometimes, like, okay, just to finish on this point, but you know, we've become such an like a sensitive everyone. Oh, I'm triggered by this and I'm triggered by this. And sometimes it's like, maybe I actually just need to choose to listen to the wisdom here, because it's not just one person saying this. Like the older generations say that all the time, stop wishing the time away. And I would be like, oh, shut up, you don't know what you're talking about. And actually it's like, they've lived longer than me. They have what I want. So maybe listen.
It's really,
you know what I mean?
And if it does trigger you, to go like, why? Oh, and the final one is when you were saying about, do you know what? Good for you and the same for me. Like,
yeah,
I was the last one in my friendship group to meet a man, buy a house, have a baby, and now I've got it. And sometimes I speak to other friends and I feel like bad. And then I'm like, well, no, because I've been there.
Yeah.
I've been the last single one in the group. But obviously I'm conscious when I meet my single friends to ask about their dates and not just go like, blah, 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 we're doing house renovations. Like, I'm conscious of that. But also to go like, I've been there and like, like I've done it, so anyone can do it. And trust me, I was a fucking hot mess. If I can do it, trust me, I'm sure if you're listening, you can.
Do you know what? That's the perfect place to end. From hot mess to happy, got what you want, but also reminder that when you get what you want, it's still fucking challenging. So yeah. Don't wish the time away. Thank you so much, Kerry. You have been an amazing guest. I hope everyone got value from this. Until next time, have a wonderful rest of your day. And that's a wrap. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really hope this episode served you and gave some practical insights and strategies around the next steps in transforming your love life from the inside out. Do come and let me know over on Instagram what resonated for you the most and why. I am @PersiaLawson. And if you want more tips and tools on how to become a vibrational match for the powerful, committed relationship that you deserve, check out my book, Love is Coming, as well as my programs and coaching containers over at PersiaLawson.com. This website is also linked in this episode's show notes. And if you got value from this episode, I'd be so grateful if you'd like, subscribe, share, and or leave a quick review. This helps the podcast rank higher so it can reach other women who want or need the support. And to have your question answered, send it over to podcast@persialawson.com and we'll get to it ASAP. Until next time, I want you to remember that love is coming for you. But in the meantime, it's your responsibility to stop looking outside of yourself for the partner you want to get and start looking inside of yourself for the partner you want to be.